I have a bad habit. I read the medical literature for fun. It's not unusual for me to go through 100 studies a day. And I recognize that the conclusion of a study tells me who paid for the study.
Right.
You have to know how to rip the data apart to see what it shows. And I'm merciless. I will call the authors and I will say, where's the data on this that's missing in your report? Mm-hmm. Because it's obvious that something was left out because it didn't fit what the company wanted to say. And you get these responses that are, oh, it got lost. And everything but the dog ate it.
Everyone, I'm Dr. Oz, and this is the Dr. Oz Podcast.
I've got a good friend coming back on the show, Dr. Jacob Tattelbaum, who's done a wonderful work helping Americans understand a bit more about pain management. And we've talked a lot about fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome with Jacob because it opens up a large topic, which is how you treat fibromyalgia. And we're going to talk about chronic pain treatments as well. So if you could just walk us through the shin treatment first, S-H-I-N, what it stands for, sleep hormone support, infections and nutritional support, but in some detail. And then I want to walk into ribose, which is the last of those four topics.
Now, as you start getting better with the disease, the checklist for getting well, as you noted, is S-H-I-N. S stands for sleep. It's critical to get 8 hours of solid sleep a night. If you go back 100 years ago, the average night's sleep in the United States was 9 hours a night, and we're now down to about 6 3/4 hours. And that's just not enough to recharge your batteries, to get the hormonal support you need. And the problem is the sleep center's not working, so you can't sleep. Mm-hmm. So I like to use a mix of natural and prescription therapies. Natural remedies such as sun theanine is outstanding for sleep.
Sun theanine?
Sun theanine from green tea is very good at putting
people... So spell it.
S-U-N, mm-hmm. and then theanine, T-H-E-A-N-I-N-E. You also can use wild lettuce, Jamaican dogwood. Any college student will tell you hops. It's not only the alcohol in the beer. valerian, passion flower. All six of these can be found. There's an excellent product called the Revitalizing Sleep Formula by Enzymatic Therapy. Most health food stores will have it. Mm-hmm. A very nice way to get all six together. Melatonin, but only 0.5 milligram. Standard dosing is too high. Mm-hmm. Calcium and magnesium at bedtime. Taking a hot bath before bedtime. And it's important to keep the bedroom cool. Mm-hmm. Because your temperature regulation isn't working, you want to have a hot bedroom, but it keeps you from sleeping deeply. And then it is really appropriate to use medications for sleep here as well. Ambien, trazodone, Klonopin. There are over 25 natural and prescription therapies that we use. If people want to go on my website at vitality101.com and click on treatment protocol, mm-hmm. it'll have a list of all the treatments we're going to talk about today so people don't have to scribble frantically. But many sleep medications make the problem worse. Things in the Valium family actually keep you in light sleep and are problematic. Mm-hmm. So I'm very picky about which natural and prescription remedies I'll use. But you need to take a mix to get your 8 to 9 hours sleep a night. And I know most of you out there at Fibro are saying, you're insane, there's no way I'm going to be able to sleep 8 hours a night. With this mix, you will be able to.
Do you worry about having to keep folks on medications every day for the rest of their life? Or the folks with fibro, when they get through the acute crisis, begin to be able to sleep normally again?
What our study showed was that once you restore energy production and hypothalamic function, basically, once you turn the circuit breaker back on, at the 2-year follow-up, people are continuing to get better and better despite having been able to come off of almost all the treatments. Long-term, I want people to take nutritional support with a vitamin powder, but many of the other treatments, most of them, can be withdrawn within the 2-year period.
Got it. Okay, so that's the sleep part. Mm-hmm. Big issue. Next one.
Hormones are a major biggie. Pretty much everybody with this disease needs a trial of bioidentical thyroid hormone, either Armour thyroid or made by a compounding pharmacist. The blood tests are horribly unreliable and will miss the vast majority of people who need thyroid, adrenal, and estrogen support.
Explain that to me for a second, because I have this debate all the time with my colleagues. Folks will say, well, you know, the thyroid levels are within normal. And we, as you know, check thyroid-stimulating hormone, which is the hormone that actually revs it up. So if that number is too high, it means that you're overworking, your hypothalamus is overworking in order to stimulate thyroid function. And some experts will tell me, and I actually tend to believe this, that if you're low normal, it may not be good enough. Mm-hmm. But are you saying even if your levels are completely normal, you can't trust them?
Correct. Understand where the normal ranges come from most tests. In med school, I was given the impression that world's experts got together and said, if it's in this range, it's not a problem. But it's no such thing. It's what's called two standard deviations. They take 100 samples that were sent in for that test, measure them. The highest and lowest, 2.5, are defined as abnormal. And the 95 in the middle are defined as a normal range. That's it. So let's say, give an example of shoe sizes. Say I want a normal range for shoe sizes. I'd sit in the mall, take the next 100 people that came by, including children, and I'd get a normal range of, say, 3 to 13.
Mm-hmm.
And say you and I got our shoes mixed up. Lisa, we went to a Hawaiian party because I live in Hawaii, and you leave the shoes at the door. We got them mixed up as we go out the door. And I'm walking out to the size 6, and you're wearing my size 12. You go to the shoe doctor, and you say, these shoes are too big. They keep falling off. And you say, yeah, sounds that way. And then he'd go ahead and measure it, and he'd say, no, honey, it's a size 12. It's in the normal range. There's no problem with your shoe. And I'd say, I can't even get my foot in the thing. And he'd say, maybe it's small. You know, I'd check it and say, nope, Jacob. You notice it's always honey for the woman and Jacob for the guy. But, he'd say, it's a size 6. It's in the normal range. There's no problem with your shoe. And I say, I can't even get my toe in the dang thing. And he say, the test is normal. There's nothing wrong with his shoes. And that's pretty much an exact analogy of what's going on. Now, for TSA, they say that there is a panel of experts, but they're not even listening to them. The experts have said it has to be under 3, and they still use 5.5. But with hypothalamic dysfunction, the TSH is a totally inaccurate test.
Right.
And if you ask Professor Gunther Nieck, who's a world's expert on hypothalamic thyroid axis function, I asked him, is TSH reliable when I was lecturing in Italy in fibromyalgia? He said, absolutely not.
Mm. So, is there any point to even check them?
Yes. Because, again, if I check a shoe size in a guy and it's a size 4, even though it's in the normal range, I know it sounds like it's kind of on the low end. And I want to make sure that you don't have an overactive thyroid triggering the disease. So you want to check the free T4 as a key test. But the main way that you tell is if you're tired, achy, weight gain, cold intolerant, brain fog, these are symptoms of low thyroid. If you have 2 or 3 of those, you deserve a trial of thyroid hormone, regardless of what the blood test shows. And it has to have the active T3 hormone, such as armor thyroid or compounded thyroid. And you need to adjust it to the optimal dose. Most doctors, even if your thyroid's low, will just put you in the normal range. So I'll get you into a size 12 shoe, you're fine.
Okay. So does the same hold true for DHEA? And just again for the listeners, DHEA is the first step of the many sex hormones, mm-hmm. Estrogens, testosterone, and the like that your body would make. And it's a hormone that is hotly debated in Western medical circles because most of us can't correlate the use of the drug in folks who have normal levels mm-hmm. with clear reproducible improvements. But I'm guessing that you're going to tell me that the level is not as important as treating the symptoms.
Well, unfortunately, with DHEA, we know that it's an important hormone, but we don't know what it does. Mm-hmm. And the only real symptoms you'll see of it being low would be decrease in hair growth. Mm-hmm. Now, you'll see fatigue and other things, but you don't know if it's from that or other things. So I do check a DHEA sulfate level, not a DHEA. DHEA fluctuates too much during the day to be helpful. And I do try to keep it at about 150 for women and about 450 for men. So that is one where I will use a test. But as any hormone, you adjust it to the dose that feels the best while keeping the blood test in the normal range. But an interesting mother hormone is pregnenolone.
Before you go there, with DHEA sulfate, mm-hmm. just so I'm clear on this, if the level is normal, would you still treat the patient with DHEA?
If it's in the normal range is ludicrous and meaningless. Right. Unless you're prepared to be in the lowest 3% of the population and be normal.
Got it.
An income of $8,100 a year is medically normal. So until the doctor is willing to live on that.
Is everyone out there hearing this? Because I want to make sure our producers recognize $8,100 is normal for you guys.
Medically.
Medically.
But of course, medical normals are absurd. So anyway.
What if it's high normal? What if it's, $100,000 equivalent?
Well, if it's high normal, I'm going to look for polycystic ovary syndrome. Especially if testosterone is high. And at that point, you'll see infertility. It's not hard to treat. Adrenal support will help that. Treating the insulin resistance will help that. Special birth control pills can help that. But once you bring that down, you're going to help a lot. And polycystic ovary syndrome is one of many triggers for CFS and fibro. High testosterone, high DHEA, I'm going to be looking for that.
Got it. Okay, so you were talking about pregnenolone now.
Mm-hmm. Now, pregnenolone is the mother hormone just after cholesterol, which is the ultimate mother hormone for these things. And we're finding more and more that most people I'm seeing with CFS and fibro have a low pregnenolone. The blockade in hormone production seems to begin even at the level of cholesterol.
Hmm. Hmm. But does the cholesterol level then go up because you're unable to make the pregnenolone that you need?
Most people tend to be on the low side because their liver function is low. Energy is low in the liver. Liver doesn't make cholesterol as well. Other people are high because their thyroid is low. So cholesterol can be all over the place in people.
Do cholesterol-lowering drugs have an impact?
Yes. Very good. You know more than most doctors already. Cholesterol-lowering drugs in the statin family are a potent trigger for fibromyalgia because they deplete something called coenzyme Q10, and they can trigger muscle pain. Unless my back is against the wall, I will not use the statins in people with fibromyalgia and CFS. Instead, I'll use berberine, inositol hexaniacinate, oats, exercise, and optimizing thyroid function. And that is usually enough to bring down the cholesterol to under 200.
Do you always give CoQ10 to your fibromyalgia patients?
No, it's a little bit pricey. If cost is not an issue, sure. But if they're on statins, anybody on Mevacor family medications, I recommend a form called Vitaline because brand is important. I'm very picky about brands because quality control in the health food industry is horrible. So I like to use a Vitaline coenzyme Q10, 200 milligrams a day.
Very helpful.
We're only just scratching the surface here. We've got a whole lot more to discuss after the break.
All right, so walk me through again. So we're done with the S and the H. Mm-hmm. Now we're into immune, I.
I would be infections and immunity. This is an immune-suppressed illness, where sometimes the immune system is overactive and then burns out and becomes underactive. Yeast overgrowth, although controversial in medicine, is a major problem. We know that it occurs in AIDS, and we know clinically, even though there's no specific test for it, that it occurs in CFS. If you have chronic sinusitis or nasal congestion, or if you have spastic colon, gas, bloating, diarrhea, or constipation, in most cases, this is yeast or fungal or candida, whatever name you want to use, overgrowth, and it needs to be treated with 6 weeks of Diflucan at 200 milligrams a day. You need to avoid sugar, except for chocolate, which I think is a healthy food, so I tell people to leave that in.
Real chocolate.
Dark chocolate.
Right. That's the best. And at that point, go with the sugar-free chocolates. Godiva has a great line. Russell Stover has a great line. And you need to take probiotics. I like Acidophilus pearls because they keep the healthy bacteria from being killed in the stomach acid as they go through two twice a day for 5 months. Mm-hmm. Grapefruit seed extract. There's many natural things, but I like to use the medication Diflucan for 6 weeks. And people find that their sinusitis will go away with that treatment for the first time in years. Because sinusitis is a fungal problem with only a secondary bacterial overgrowth.
You ever use the neti pots for sinus infections?
Absolutely. Neti pots are wonderful for those who can handle them. You pour it in one side of your nose and it goes out the other. But for most Americans, they kind of go, ooh, when they think about it. So I just tell them to take an eyedropper and take a salt water solution, a quarter teaspoon of salt per cup of lukewarm water, lay on the bed, put an eyedropper or two of it in each nostril, blow your nose in a towel a couple times. Blow gently so you don't hurt your ears. Also, there's a wonderful sinusitis nose spray that's a mix of antibacterial, Bactroban, an antifungal, xylitol, and a little bit of beclomethasone, which is outstanding. Compounding pharmacists can make it. I like ITC Pharmacy. But any of the numbers, we just call it the sinusitis nose spray. It's outstanding for knocking out the sinusitis, and you don't get all the side effects of the antibiotics.
You know, I got to say, you have an encyclopedic insight. I mean, I have trouble remembering the name of the over-the-counter medication. You're going into the details of the beclomethasone, 1.5%.
Well, that's why I saw it on the website. It's vitality101.com. If people click on treatment protocol, every treatment we're going to talk about with full directions for use and how to find them, it's all there.
But did you just ask you about how you actually, you know, want... have you always had an impressive memory for these level of detail? I mean,
Yes. That's why I was class geek, you know?
Oh, my goodness. Before or after you're homeless?
even before. I have a bad habit. I read the medical literature for fun. It's not unusual for me to go through 100 studies a day. And I recognize that the conclusion of a study tells me who paid for the study.
Right.
You have to know how to rip the data apart to see what it shows. And I'm merciless. I will call the authors and I will say, where's the data on this that's missing in your report? Mm-hmm. Because it's obvious that something was left out because it didn't fit what the company wanted to say. And you get these responses that are, oh, it got lost. And everything but the dog ate it. So I've been doing this for 30 years now. And I remember I had an old friend of mine who could always go right to the heart of the problem. He's a psychiatrist. And mm-hmm. I said, how do you go right to it? And he just looked at me and said, I've been doing this for 50 years. Yeah. He's got 20 years on me. Yeah.
Well, talking about ribose, something that I hear about all the time from my father-in-law. So to teach us a little bit about why taking a sugar can be good for us.
Well, most sugars are harmful because we get 140 to 150 pounds per person per year added to our diet. That's 18% of calories, and it's nasty. So that's why I tell people to avoid sugar. But the universe has a sense of humor. I mean, there's a certain irony that comes with my having told people avoid sugar, and now I'm finding a specific sugar called ribose that your body uses. That's the foundation of energy production. If you look at the molecules like ATP, which are they're kind of like the dollars, the paper that your dollar bills for energy are printed on, they're the backbone of energy production. These molecules are made mostly of B vitamins, adenine, which you have plenty of, and ribose. And what you're finding is that in energy-depleted states, especially heart disease, your father-in-law then is a very wise man if he knows about this, because the many heart problems are associated with a loss of energy production in the heart, just like you see in chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. And the heart muscle, just like all the other muscles, are then struggling to go ahead and function. And they basically go on a downhill spiral as they try to keep up. We found that ribose supplied the backbone for energy production. And we were hoping, we did a study in CFS and fibromyalgia, we were hoping to see maybe a 10% increase in energy, because that's a lot for a single nutrient. We saw a 45% average increase in energy after only 3 weeks in the people who took ribose. It just basically knocked their socks off. In people with heart disease, and I talk to doctor after doctor after doctor, I hear words like, it's a miracle. This is outstanding, amazing. You don't see that with too many treatments. Frankly, anybody that I have with heart disease, we had one person in the study with atrial fibrillation, the abnormal heart rhythm. Mm. By the end of the study, it had gone away, and he was able to come off and stay off his medications. Because as you restore energy efficiency in the heart, you get less angina because it works more efficiently. It is amazing for diastolic congestive heart failure, where people get shortness of breath and ankle swelling and get short of breath laying flat. Abnormal heart rhythms will tend to decrease. I like to add certainly magnesium, acetyl L-carnitine, and coenzyme Q10 to that mix. Mm-hmm. But ribose is amazing for heart disease, amazing for chronic fatigue syndrome. But the proper dose is critical. 5 grams, which would be one scoop in many containers, 3 times a day for 2 weeks to 3 weeks, and then you can just take it morning and night.
So it's actually 15 grams a day, taking 5 grams several times a day.
In the beginning, but after 3 weeks, you can drop it down to 5 grams twice a day, 10 grams a day.
Side effects?
The only side effect we saw were that 2 people got too energized and felt hyper. So in one just lowered the dose, and the other one got scared because they felt too energized and then stopped it. The one who lowered the dose was fine. Just take it with food if that happens.
You take the ribose?
Every morning. I have a vitamin powder that I use because it replaces 35 tablets of supplements. So I just take that instead of handfuls of stuff, and I throw a scoop of ribose into that, and I take my morning drink, and I'm good to go.
What do you put it in, water or juice?
You can put it in water, juice, milk, coffee, tea, food. You can put it in. It looks and tastes like sugar, and it's heat stable. You can put it in anything you want.
Does it have calories? That's what Lisa's dying to ask.
The funny thing is it's not metabolized. First of all, it only has 20 calories anyway in the 5 grams, but it's not metabolized as a sugar, so it doesn't cause any weight gain.
You want to start taking some, Lisa?
I've been taking it for years, darling.
Yeah?
No, of course not.
Oh. Can never
my
tell.
Dad does give it to my father's a cardiac surgeon also, and he gives it to his patients.
Yeah, because there's a study going on now. I guess I can talk about it, where they have about 160 people that have gone through so far having bypass. Mm-hmm. And the ones who are pre-treated with ribose, there's been no deaths in the entire series.
Mm. Columbia, better watch out.
Maybe I'm doing the study. I'm going to sneak into the study.
Into your patients.
It's really available. I mean, I would use it in any heart patient out there at the drop of a hat. It's probably going to be the most important new nutrient discovery of this decade.
Mm. Ribose.
It's outstanding. It's fun.
And in addition to the supplements, there are also some food advice that you give to folks with fibromyalgia. Just walk us through those real quick. And then
first of all,
the pain.
You want to increase water intake. Now, mm-hmm. people are going to say, I'm already drinking like a fish. I'm going to say, yes, but you're peeing like a racehorse. And because the antidiuretic or water-retaining hormone is also low. And people say, how many glasses of water should I drink a day? And, you know, I can't imagine, you know, I picture there's this little place in a corner of Haiti somewhere where they put people and say you have to count glasses of water for eternity. I mean, it's a horrible way to live your life. So don't do that. Just check your mouth and check your lips. If your mouth and lips are dry, you're thirsty, drink more water. Get a good quality water. Doesn't have to be expensive. Distilled water is okay if you're taking the vitamin powders because they have the minerals in it. Otherwise, you need the minerals, so it would be in the water. But basically, drink enough so that you're not so that your mouth and lips are moist. Also, we mentioned avoiding sugar, except for chocolate and ribose, I guess. Mm-hmm. I'll throw that in. And also, most people find that they feel better with a high-protein, low-carbohydrate diet. But everybody's different. You want to eat what leaves you feeling the best. Mm-hmm. It's not always what you crave. But you check in 2-3 hours after you eat, you'll see how you feel. The other thing is increase your salt intake unless you have high blood pressure. Most of you out there have low blood pressure with this disease. More salt is critical because the adrenal's not working properly.
Got it.
The way you can tell you need adrenal support, you get irritable when hungry. If it's like a light switch goes off and your spouse knows they have 3 minutes to feed you or you will kill them, you need adrenal support.
All right.
We have a lot more to talk about, but first, let's take a quick break.
We were Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum talking about fibromyalgia. Let's switch gears and talk about pain for a little bit. And you know, these are chronic pain conditions that so many of us are afflicted by. And so frequently when we are seen by friends or patients who have these ailments, we throw a few medications at them to deal with the acute crisis, but often don't deal with the underlying issue. And you highlight quite nicely in the book that pain is a symptom that you shouldn't ignore. I mean, you don't want to have it as your wake-up call, but it is a wake-up call. Get you thinking about something you're doing, whether it's repetitive injury from some act or basic rehab needs that you may have in your life. So let's start with back pain.
Well, let's take a look. As you mentioned, the pain is a warning. Pain is not the enemy. Mm-hmm. And I want to note CFS and fibromyalgia are not the enemy either, like blowing a fuse.
What's CFS?
Chronic fatigue syndrome.
Good.
Like blowing a fuse, they protect your body. And in fact, I just want to mention one thing before I go to pain. Chronic fatigue syndrome is not the enemy. It is an opportunity to get your life back. Most people who get it are been people who've been doing what they think they should do instead of what their soul or psyche are really asking them to do. And it pulls you out of the game long enough to get a sense of what feels good to you. So I can get you better. The Fibromyalgia and Fatigue Centers, you can go to a website, www.fibroandfatigue.com. Their doctors know how to get you well. They're all over the country. But the key thing is once you get better, if you go back to a life you hate, I've done nothing for you. And you're going to get sick again, maybe in a different way. So you need to check in with what feels good to you, not what you think you should do. If you follow that, the illness will give you your life back. Now, pain is also not the enemy. If you have your hand on a hot stove, you want to know before you smell burning flesh. That's what pain is for. It's the oil light on your dashboard that says something needs attention. Now, when that red flashing light goes off, you go to the doctor and you say, this light's annoying me. He says, no problem. He puts a Band-Aid over it and he says, all better. And then you wonder why the motor burns out later, why you get 16,500 deaths a year from NSAIDs in the United States.
Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory disease.
We have medications the standard arthritis medications.
Right.
Over 16,000 deaths. And they're unnecessary because the natural remedies are more effective and very safe. So let's start with back pain. The studies show that if you use willow bark in proper dosing, it's twice as effective as these arthritis-type medications that are normally used for back pain. Also, if you have disc pain, you don't need surgery. There's an old herbal remedy turned prescription called Colchicine. And there's studies of over 6,000 patients now that show that if you give 1 milligram intravenously a week for 6 weeks, it knocks out disc pain in over 70 to 80% of cases. And if you add magnesium and B vitamins to the IV, let me put it this way. As a pain specialist, mm-hmm. I've sent one person for disc surgery for pain in the last 20 years. He had to go to Hopkins for multi-level specialty surgery. All the rest of them have had the pain go away with the IV Colchicine once a week for 6 weeks. Easy. There's a big problem, though. It's cheap. $6 a dose.
And why? What does Colchicine do? Colchicine, by the way, is a drug that we commonly use for gout and ailments of that nature. What does Colchicine do that takes care of back pain?
Well, it's technically called a mitotic spindle inhibitor, yada, yada, yada. But what it means is that it gets into the disc space. It's an anti-inflammatory. It's not the pressure on the nerve from the disc that causes the pain. It's the inflammation from the gel in the disc, which is inflammatory, and it puts out that fire. It's remarkable. It's just a wonderful thing. You don't need surgery for that. You don't need surgery for carpal tunnel syndrome.
What do you do for carpal tunnel syndrome?
Vitamin B6, 250 milligrams a day, a wrist splint that keeps your hand in a neutral position at night, that you're holding a glass of water, kind of neutral. And I use a little bit of thyroid. And within 6 weeks, because I've had one person who had continuing repetitive stress injury who needed surgery, but that's it. And every other patient has gone away within about 6 to 12 weeks.
Now, why B6 and not the folic acid or B12 or any of the other methylating agents?
B6 and thyroid both have the effect of decreasing swelling in the tissues. And carpal tunnel is when there's swelling that pinches on a nerve going through the wrist. It decreases swelling and the problem goes away.
Headaches. So you got an encyclopedia here. Just keep going. Headaches.
Well, migraine headaches. It's funny. I was on one of the major national networks going on. They had a thing on taking out major parts of the face muscles to decrease migraines by 50%. And when I went on, I wanted to say, look, studies show that vitamin B2, riboflavin, at 400 milligrams at 10 cents a day, decreases it by 67%. But it's tacky to diss a person on right before you, so I had to bite my tongue. I'm not good at that, but I had to do it anyway. But basically, for migraine headaches, vitamin B2, magnesium, the B vitamins in general, are very good. A Petidolex, which is an herb called butterbur, also very, very effective at both treating and preventing migraines. Treating food allergies will be a very important part of eliminating migraines in many studies. Migraines are very easy to prevent.
Osteoporosis. I hate to go through this so quickly, but
Let's do thumbnails. Strontium is 170% as effective as the standard osteoporosis medications, but much safer and much cheaper. In my book, in the Pain-Free 1-2-3, I talk about 640 milligrams a day, but I'm thinking 170 milligrams a day for most people is plenty.
Okay. And I must say, and this is an issue that I'm dealing with my own family because my mother has bones that are brittle, although she was a big bone woman her whole life.
Have her take the vitamin powder. They can go on my website and find it, but any health food store will have it that we talked about earlier. It's going to have many nutrients like boron, magnesium, other things that are critical.
Good.
There's many, many nutrients. Calcium is actually a small player, but take the calcium if you have osteoporosis, but get the strontium.
How about vitamin K2?
Vitamin K2 is not as important. It's important for building bone, but the studies show it really doesn't play that big of a role in preventing fractures.
See, at least I told you boron was important.
Mm-hmm. You're always right, honey.
Oh, God, where'd you find her? I'm
like, Dr. Dettelbaum, thank you so much for being so precise in your recommendations and so comprehensive. Your philosophy towards healing is one that I want a lot of the listeners to at least be aware of. I appreciate the work you've put into the field. Again, Pain-Free 1-2-3 and From Fatigue to Fantastic are wonderful treatises and books that I think actually can be helpful to folks, because so often we rely on conventional medical dogma to lead you down the garden path. And, you know, if you've got a gunshot to the chest, I do think I'm the right person to help you, because I know how to put the right kind of proline in the hole to quench the bleeding. The ailments we've been speaking about today, chronic fatigue syndrome, which wasn't even acknowledged to be really a disease by many physicians until recently, and even today, by the way, I think there are many who still believe that it's not really an ailment that has definable characteristics that can be treated. And things like back pain afflicts a majority of the population at some point in their life. Again, I agree wholeheartedly with your belief that we shouldn't be taking these folks off to surgery. Most of the studies show that as well. But let me ask you one big question at the end. We've been talking a lot about nutritional supplements and food issues, but there are other therapies that probably need to be parts of these equations. You mentioned for both carpal tunnel and for back pain, the rehab probably has an element. You did mention the wrist for the splint. What do you put on? How do you put your emphasis on those issues?
For the rehab issues, if you're going to go with a physical therapist, ask for one who knows a technique called spray and stretch by Dr. Janet Travell. Mm-hmm. If they know that technique, they're probably really good. Mm-hmm. But many physical therapists think that if a muscle is shortened, you should pull on it.
Yeah.
And all that does is hurt the muscle, and the muscle will pull right back. Where with a stretch and spray, there's no pain. You can release the muscle in 10 seconds very easily.
How does it work?
Basically, it's a cold spray that blocks the pain reflex for about 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. During that time, you can stretch it back to its normal length with no problem at all, and it's done. It's a remarkable thing when people see it. I've knocked out chronic headaches that people have had for decades with a 30-second spray and stretch. Because, again, if you try to pull on muscle, it just pulls back. It hurts. But if you block the pain, 30 seconds is all it takes. You release the muscle. It's done. But you also have to treat the underlying energy problem in the muscle by treating sleep, hormone, infection, nutrition. You do that combination, then you get long-lasting relief. Otherwise, you go to a chiropractor and you feel better for about 3 hours, but the muscle goes back in a shortened position. You're going forever. You treat the underlying problems metabolically with sleep, hormones, infection, nutrition. I know I say it over and over. Then when the chiropractic release is done, It'll stay released after a couple treatments.
Dr. Tattelbaum, thank you very, very much for joining us.